Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, March the 20th, 2015, and it's Meet Out Day. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here by our co-host, Cynthia Ganatra.
Hello.
Our guest co-host, Elise Jacobson.
Hi.
And our control room people, Amir Ali and Alyssa Ray.
Hello.
Hi.
Jackie is away today. Welcome, everyone. Today is our annual Meet Out Day-themed show. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at coopradio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. To start off with our Meet Out show, we'll be presenting a segment entitled Going Vegan and Staying Vegan, Overcoming the Barriers. There are lots of people cutting out the meat out of their diets these days, but the majority of them don't stay on the veg path. We'll be discussing among us the common reasons why vegetarians and vegans revert back to eating meat and offering advice and solutions to overcoming these barriers. Then we'll have a feature interview with Paul Shapiro about all things to do with cutting out the meat. Paul is the Vice President of Farm Animal Protection for the Humane Society of the United States, as well as the founder of the nonprofit group Compassion Over Killing. And I know he is always at the forefront of the latest info in regards to the animal agriculture industry and trends in dropping the meat from our diets. He'll be on the show today answering all our burning questions when it comes to the latest news in animal ag and the food industry. Plus, we'll offer his thoughts on trends in the past of going meatless. That interview is coming out in about 32 minutes, so please do stay tuned. So you might be wondering, what is Meet Out Day?
Yeah, so as you said earlier, today is Meet Out Day. So it's the 31st annual Meet Out, which is celebrated worldwide. Meet Out is the world's longest and largest running grassroots diet education campaign, established in 1985 by Farm Animal Rights Movement, also known as FARM. During Meet Out, which is celebrated in several countries, thousands of people hold cooking demonstrations, meetups and potlucks, film screenings, or hand out samples of delicious vegan food. Today I saw on my Facebook that at the University of Toronto, there's a group of vegans handing out delicious vegan foods to students out there. And you can visit meetout.org to sign up for Meet Out and to get more information about why people go vegan. So they have a really good website that has an infographic that shows animals and some of the suffering that happens on farms. So you can learn about that and also the environmental impacts of eating animals. So check out meetout.org.
So I'm curious, why only Meet Out for one day? Don't we want people to go meatless and vegan for the rest of their lives? So why this campaign?
I think it's to, you know, get people exposed to vegan food. I think a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions that vegan food is gross or not filling. So I think it's a step. I think, you know, there's a lot that needs to be done. And I really like that their website does talk about the main issue, which is always the animals and the suffering that animals go through. And so that we don't have to eat them and that there's delicious vegan options and it's healthy and good for the environment. So there's no reason not to. So I think it's, you know, maybe a gateway day for some people.
You know, journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah, definitely. And I think this special day also reaches out to those who just would never even consider going meat free for one day. You know, there's people out there who say, I have to eat meat with every meal. I can't go one day without eating meat. But if you were to suggest to them, well, there's this Meet Out Day on March 20th.
Yeah.
Do you think you could just maybe try to not eat animals for one day? Then maybe it's a baby step. It's the first step. And well, for some people it could be a big step, but again, it's about forming habits, right? And once you try something once, kind of push your barriers and push your boundaries, and then going meat free for one day, who knows what could come after that. So I know that FARM also does offer resources in the future too. So if you sign up and take this pledge on meetout.org, they'll continue to send you resources after that to help you along your veg path for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so Elise, I wanted to chat with you about something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you had an interesting week this week. Tell us what you did.
I did. Well, a group of activists did an especially exciting disruption this week at Vancouver Fashion Week. There was a designer there visiting from, I believe, South Korea, called Juko Julie was the name of the line. And their entire line pretty much was fur coats, fur vests, fur trimmed everything.
I even saw fur skirts.
Yeah, yeah. Perfect. There was literally fur on every piece, I think. And so basically three activists went in there and stormed the runway. There was a fair amount of media coverage on this from what I've seen. Metro News covered it, got some really great video and photos. Mm-hmm. And so three activists in turn kind of took signs that said, for example, this is not fashion, this is violence, and walked down the runway with the models. All the flashing lights, the loud music, everything. I actually went inside the tent, inside the fashion show with the protesters to take video and stuff, so I was up close with all the action. And after that was all done, we went outside, and there was a big group of protesters outside doing chants and holding signs and just disrupting the whole event. And so, yeah, it was cool. There was a lot of drama. A lot of people were talking about it after. And
yeah, so why would you choose to target this specific event, which, like, there was a lot of fur at this event, but why, yes, why choose this event?
I think mainly because just of the sheer volume of fur in the collection. I mean, like I said, every piece that I saw had fur on it or was pretty much completely fur. And, I mean, obviously, you know, any use of animals' skins is cruel. I mean, there's leather, wool, anything. But this sort of collection was especially frivolous, I think, and it's very much a high-end sort of event. You know, these pieces are extremely expensive. They're just sort of reserved for the wealthy. And it's just kind of an archaic, frivolous display of cruelty. And so, yeah.
Yeah, and I had read, and maybe you can clear this up, that one of the models said that she was pushed on the runway. Can you clear
yeah,
that
up? Yeah, that's completely untrue. And if people believe that rumor, I would invite them to look at the video footage again on metronews.ca, I think is the website. There's an article with a video, and you can see all three of the disruptions from activists. Nobody was pushed or touched, and yeah.
I wanted to talk about just more of the larger message conveyed with this action. When I we posted this on our Facebook page, actually, Animal mm-hmm. Voices Vancouver, if you want to see this story. It was posted a couple days, and I posted on my personal page saying that it's disrupting violence. Mm-hmm. So what exactly does that mean, to disrupt violence, and why is it important to disrupt this violence?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, people have been saying, oh, yeah, it was rude of these activists to disrupt this show. You know, the designer put a lot of work into it. She put a lot of money into it. You know, it was really important for the models, an important opportunity for them or whatever. But I mean, I really feel like in anything, like, you know, if we strive to have a just society and an ethical society, then we can't just sit by and tolerate, much less respect, displays of injustice, displays of cruelty and violence. So I think absolutely, regardless of how expensive or flashy or whatever the event might be, I think it's incumbent upon people who value justice to disrupt it.
Well, thanks for that, Elise. Did you have something? Okay, so yeah, thanks for doing this protest, and a few other, I think, of our Animal Voices hosts were there as well. And,
yeah.
And I personally think it's important to, like I said, like calling this disrupting the violence and not normalizing the violence. It's fur is it's violence and it's cruelty, and I really think it's important to speak up for that and speak out for the animals.
Absolutely, I agree.
Roots Reggae, heard every Friday night from midnight until daylight. 7 hours long and 7 hours strong. Giving you music for the mind, soul, and body. It's an holistic experience. We say it's ITIL and vital. My name is Lyndon V, and you've got it locked in Vancouver's Healing Station, 100.5 FM CFRO.
So now getting into some events. Tomorrow, March 31st, Direct Action Everywhere Vancouver Coast Salish Territories will be hosting a demo at Vancouver's Farmers Market protesting their Meet Your Maker event. So this event, called Meet Your Maker, M-E-A-T, your maker, promotes grass-fed, local, humane meat and includes a distribution of their handy meat directory. Also, they'll be having three meat demos, including sausage making, know your cuts of meat, and butchering. The demo will include disrupting the violence and telling the truth that there is no humane way to kill someone who doesn't want to die. They will be meeting at 8:45 on 186 East 20th in Vancouver. And I hear there might be muffins. Really go. And after that, tomorrow is also in Vancouver, the March Against Racism protest. So they'll be going directly from the Meet Your Maker protest to the racism protest. And speaking of the humane meat myth, Liberation BC is hosting a humane meat leafletting on Wednesday from, so Wednesday, this Wednesday, from 5:30 to 6:30 at Grandview Park, which is located in Vancouver on Commercial Drive in Charles Street. You can join them as they hand out leaflets and have conversations with the public about animal rights and the humane myth. For those who don't know the humane myth, it's the idea that we can exploit animals and exploit and kill animals for meat, dairy, eggs, leather, etc. humanely. Corporations and individuals who promote this myth often label their products cage-free, humane, organic, or sustainable in order to convince the public that their products are ethical. However, we know there's no such thing as humane exploitation.
And I just wanted to mention, too, that if people want to know more about what I call the humane myth, or we did an excellent interview with Hope Bohannick in the fall last year about this subject. She wrote a book called The Ultimate Betrayal, and she speaks about many of these issues. So check that out if you want to learn more at animalvoices.org and look up The Ultimate Betrayal.
And on March 28th, at the University of British Columbia, there will be a lecture on the Peruvian dolphin kill called Traveling with Dolphin Killers, What I Learned Working Undercover by Stefan Austermueller. The Vancouver Institute presents a public lecture by Stefan Austermueller, executive director of the Peruvian dolphin defender group called Mundo Azul, that works to expose not just the cruelty of captivity, but also the illegal dolphin hunt in Peru, where thousands of dolphins are killed each year and sold illegally or used as shark bait. So this is a lecture that's not to be missed. Again, that's called Traveling with Dolphin Killers, What I Learned Working Undercover. Saturday, March 28th at 8:15 p.m., the University of British Columbia, Lecture Hall Number 2, Woodward Instructional Resources Center in Vancouver, BC.
Yeah, it's a free talk as well, and we had Stefan on the show last week, I believe it was, to speak about some of this issue. It's really fascinating. Again, if you want to hear that podcast, you can check it out on our website, animalvoices.org. But if you can at all make the talk, I would highly recommend going. I think it's going to be great. He's been doing a lot of really interesting undercover work, and he needs support for his project.
Great. So if you have an animal-friendly event that you'd like on our show, please email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
So for today's Meat Out themed show, we'd like to talk about obstacles to staying on a cruelty-free vegan path. We often talk on the show about reasons to go vegan for the animals, the environment, and your health, and we give advice on taking steps to do so, but it still remains a fact that today there are more ex-vegans and vegetarians in the world than current vegans and vegetarians. And why is it that the vast majority of people who stop eating animals eventually go back to eating meat? Well, we do have some data on this. The Humane Research Council recently conducted a large study of people who had quit eating vegetarian to find out their reasons for doing so. First, it's interesting to note that the biggest difference between those who are currently vegetarian compared to those who stopped being vegetarian is that current vegetarians are motivated by animal protection reasons. Also interesting to note is about 75% of people who quit eating meat eventually decide to go back to eating animal flesh. So why is that, and how can we support people to overcome the barriers that they might face to keeping on the vegan path? I'd like to use this segment to give our own advice from our own experiences to hopefully be able to help anyone who is listening to this who may be experiencing some struggles or who are worried about struggles that they may face if they are going to take the step to go meat-free.
So yeah, in this survey, the largest reason comprising of 35% of ex-vegetarians went back to eating flesh because of health reasons. So I hear this sometimes, and I used to be a nutritionist, and I think that a lot of people go vegan, and oftentimes they'll take out meat, but they won't add anything else. So they won't add in their plant-based proteins. And you know, you can look to other diets of people who are vegetarians, like Indians, and you have to add lentils and these types of foods into your diet. So I think a lot of people don't look to get support from either a dietitian, a doctor, a naturopath, anybody that can help you find a balanced way of eating. But I also think that a lot of people, from my personal experience, go say it's health reasons because it's a psychological thing. They don't want to give up meat and they're looking for any reason to go back to eating meat. And I find when I had some clients who said, oh, you know, I went vegan and I went anemic. And then I'd say, oh, well, were you anemic before you went vegan? And they're like, yeah, I've always had iron issues. So you find that people usually had some issues prior. And sometimes I think they think going vegan is going to heal these issues. And being vegan is not a miracle diet. You have to take care of yourself and eat healthy. And health doesn't just come from what you eat. There's a lot of different factors. So I think that's a lot of the reason. And, you know, society is heavily meat-based. So people just, you know, listen to what some of their doctors say. And some doctors may say eating meat is good for you. When I went vegetarian when I was 12, I went to my doctor and he said, no, you can't go vegetarian. You're not going to grow, all these things. And I had seen a chicken die. So for me, going vegetarian was related to this animal. And I was like, nope, I don't care what you're saying. I'm going vegetarian. And till this day, he still bugs me. And he told me I'd never grow. I'm the tallest one in my family. So... yeah,
nice.
And I'm the only vegetarian. Well, not now. Now I'm not, but I was back then. So
what would be some solutions to that health problem that some people claim? Like, truly, like, I know, as you said, like, some people, they'll just take the meat out, but they won't really think about their nutrition otherwise.
Yeah, so I would recommend, you know, seeing somebody. So seeing whoever, what kind of, you know, if you're... You can see a dietitian, you can see a nutritionist, you can see a doctor, a naturopath, even, you know, medical doctors, conventional medical doctors will most likely tell you that being vegan is healthy. Even the USDA says that well-planned vegan diets are healthy at any stage of life. So mm-hmm. I think that you have to do your research and, you know, get a book. Becoming Vegan is a great book, has lots of good tips on what nutrients you may be having to add in. You know, we all know that you should add in a B12 and, you know, like I said before, adding in some of these plant-based proteins are a really good step, but looking into it and reading some books and meeting with some professionals and making sure that your diet is well planned. I also think that, you know, you meet people and they just go vegan and it just kind of works because they're just like super happy to be vegan. And I think that, you know, that was me. I went from, you know, eating dairy to not eating dairy and I just felt so good. Mm. And yeah, I started to eat more fruits and vegetables and I felt really good. So I just say, you know, get some help, get some professional help. And, you know, if you find a doctor that says, no, being vegan is not good, then find another doctor or find somebody else.
You know, there's, sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, another large reason for quitting vegetarianism or veganism is the hassle and social stigma of the lifestyle, as these reasons were called in the survey. And I would like to acknowledge that I see these as very significant hurdles when it comes to retaining one's commitment to the lifestyle. I think in the beginning, people have a reason why they want to go veg, but it's not enough of a solid commitment to stick with it necessarily and to become really impassioned in the lifestyle by making it a habit and a way of your life so that it's second nature. And I really do think that that is what is needed. So for people who just think it's a hassle or that social stigma, what do you have to say about that?
Well, we were talking earlier about kind of keeping the focus on the animals. I feel like with so many of these hurdles, and perhaps especially this one, I feel like that's extra important, is to just center the animals in, you know, just make sure that that's your reason for doing this and keep the focus on that. Because, you know, really, I think that being vegan is, it's not just a lifestyle. It's certainly not just a diet. It's a social justice issue. It's an ethical position. So, you know, really like the eating animals that has victims, you know, and we have to focus on the victims, and any sort of small inconvenience that we might experience is worthwhile to me, just for, you know, advancing the cause of justice.
Yeah, I think to get out of that social stigma as well, the only way to do that is by keeping on with your lifestyle and being mm-hmm. strong about it. Because the reason that there is a social stigma in our society these days is because we're not the majority. Mm-hmm. We're a small minority. So how do we, I guess, empower ourselves in order to sort of see past that?
Well, I think you just said it. We're the minority, mm-hmm. so we need to, you know, kind of stick together. You know, mm-hmm. you need to find your tribe. You need to find other vegans. And even if you're somewhere remote and there's not other vegans, we're lucky now. We have social media. You can always reach out. There's always people out there who can support you. And I think that's really important with any social justice movement, to have people who have like-minded views on this world and to stick together. And I think that's super helpful. That helped me. I was in New Zealand. I was kind of, me and my partner were lonely vegans. And when we moved back here, it was really nice to have this community. And that's why I got more involved in activism. And I felt stronger in my position and to combat people you meet in, you know, the rest of the world that isn't vegan. And mm-hmm. I felt stronger now that I have a community. But I think when I was in New Zealand, I was a little bit quieter. I didn't really debate people as much, even though I felt exactly the same way. It's because I didn't have that kind of community behind me for that support. And I think that's huge.
Yeah. And in terms of just like the kind of everyday, you know, inconveniences and stuff, I find that being vegan is getting more and more convenient all the time. More and more restaurants are carrying vegan options. There's more foods, you know, sort of what we call convenience foods sold in stores. And even in, you know, I travel a lot for my work, and I find even I go to small towns and I can find veggie meats and that sort of thing, you know, just stuff that's really easy and quick to prepare. So I find it's just making the sort of everyday finding food, you know, it's making it so much easier.
Yeah, well, some people did say that too. People complained that it took too long to prepare food. So mm-hmm. I like those ideas, tips that you've given. And it's actually encouraging to me to know, because I know you travel a lot, Elise.
Yeah.
That it's, and you travel in the States even. And
it's not
too hard for you. I know when, I mean, you do need to make a little bit of an effort. When I travel, I always have my, you know, my snack bars with me. And I always, I mean, even now, I always have food with me.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I sort of have a scarcity issue myself of like, if I go somewhere, I might not have enough food to keep me. So I'm, you know, I'm a big proponent of Costco. I'm always stocking up. There's a lot of good vegan food items there, actually. But just, but for more real, like wholesome foods, like this morning, Cynthia came with me to the market, and Cynthia actually bought a big box of organic mangoes for how much?
They weren't organic, but they're still great. They're $3.99 for, $3.99. I think I have like 10 mangoes. Okay. It's amazing. I'm super excited.
I mean, that was another complaint too, is cost, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And I did get, actually, so if people are into organics and that's important to them, I did get 3 organic beets, like huge ones, for like a dollar something there as well. So, you know, you can find deals and for fruits.
Shop
and
around. Yeah, I enjoy shopping around myself. Like, you don't just have to think like, oh, I have to go to Whole Foods or the mm-hmm. local organic grocer to get what I need. It's shop around. I do a lot at Costco. I'm always like highlighting all my purchases at Sunrise Market, which Cynthia acknowledged that is the cheapest place to buy produce in Vancouver for sure. So,
well, we're lucky in Vancouver to have all these little produce markets. There's often some really great deals, I find.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, and another related reason, which we kind of touched on earlier, that people gave in this survey was that being, I think it was specifically vegetarian, took a toll on their social life. I want to touch on that again, kind of what Cynthia was saying earlier about just staying connected with other vegans, getting connected and staying connected. Again, we're so lucky to have the internet and social media now. There are so many Facebook groups and message boards and whatnot that are just full of vegans, you know, like people who have been vegan for a long time, people who are newly going vegan. And those, especially if you're living in a place where maybe you're sort of geographically isolated, I think those can mm-hmm. be a great source of support and advice and tips. And I wanted to mention something too. There's a website theveganrd.com, which I really like. It's vegan dietitian, and she just sort of blogs about different issues that come up with vegans. And she has an article called 10 Tips for Staying Happy and Healthy on a Vegan Diet, I think. And I highly recommend it. It sort of pertains to everything that we're talking about. But she also does mention that, you know, it's important to stay connected to, you know, get involved with meetup groups, get yourself a mentor. Like if you have a friend who is vegan and they seem to be doing well, pick their brain, ask them for advice, and get them to hang out with you and, you know, help you out in your journey. And that helps a lot.
Yeah, I like your idea about getting connected online, because we're lucky here in Vancouver, there's quite a large community. I mean, Elise, you are actually one of the administrators of the Vancouver Vegans Facebook group.
Right.
How many people do we have on there
now?
We
just passed 1,500 people. Yeah, it's been growing rapidly.
I remember you reporting 1,300 not too long ago.
Yeah, like, I know. It's been growing really quickly. Every day I admit new people, which is super exciting.
So we're lucky here in Vancouver, but if you live somewhere that's isolated, join an online group. But not only that, is I would encourage you to start your own group,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, start it and people will come. I bet there's a lot of people in isolated communities who are interested in this lifestyle and they just don't know where to go.
Sure. Just speaking of that, Joel and Laura, who used to live in Vancouver, they just posted that they've moved to Shuswap, to Salmon Arm, and they just made a poster and they're having a vegan potluck. They have no idea if there's any other vegans in their town, but they've made a poster and wish us luck. We're having this potluck. And that's so, awesome. You know, I think like anybody can do that. Make a sign, have a potluck, invite people. They don't have to be vegan. It has to be a vegan potluck. And maybe you can even inspire some people and tell them why you're vegan and talk about the animals.
Actually, my friend Ben Strothman, also known as the vegan drag queen Honey LeBronx, who does Big Fat Vegan Radio podcast. Anyways, I was listening to one of his podcasts recently, and he moved into a new building in New York City. And he basically, I guess they have like an internal discussion board like online for their building. And he said, any vegans out there, let's have a potluck. There was something like 6 vegans from his building.
That's so
cool. And they all got together, and so they have that really small community there, that's, and now they're all buds, right? Because they're the vegans in their community. So yeah, just go out there and try to make some friends. And I guess if you're a shy person, because not everyone just wants to go out there to make friends, I think it can be more easily done online as well.
And
I want to acknowledge too, you know, like lack of social support is, I think, often like a really significant reason why people quit. And I've read stories about that. Just like, I couldn't stand it anymore. People around me were always eating meat. So I just, you know, I was weak and I went back to eating meat. But again, don't be weak, be strong.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to mention briefly too, is just for me, just getting involved in activism for animals has been super helpful too. Just being involved with groups of other vegans who care a lot about animals and speak out for animals regularly. It's been an amazing thing to just have a group of like-minded people. So I highly recommend that. That also helps you to keep the focus on the animals just front and center, and just really solidify your commitment to this lifestyle.
And so also in the survey, they said 1 in 5 participants stated that they had irresistible urges to taste cooked flesh once more. So they, you know, they were craving meats. And for many people, meat tastes good, and that can be hard to give up. And I don't remember, because I haven't had meat in so long. And to me, meat tastes really, looks bad. Looks like, even today we walk through the meat section to leave, and it just, I get like physically like shaky just because I see these are bodies of violence.
You can see the body parts in that case, actually. I've noticed them before.
Even with dairy and eggs, you know, they're products of violence. And I think for us, because we're focused on the animals, and I recommend people who do have the urges, and you may have that craving still here and there, but to really focus on the animals and to watch the movies like Earthlings, you know, once you watch exactly how it is that you get that like piece of meat on your plate that's so well garnished, where it came from this animal that suffered and was brutally murdered, you start to make these connections and you start to disconnect. I think we have a lot of like cultural connections of meat reminds us of holidays and families, and so the smell is connected to these like positive events. It's kind of like Pavlov's dog,
right?
Like,
exactly,
you know. And so to break those connections and to start to think of, you know, meat as violence, and once you start to have that, you really realize that, you know, meat starts to taste bad. And I know I was talking to a vegan the other day and they said, you know, I used to love the smell of bacon, and now if I smell animal flesh, I want to like throw up. And that may not happen for you, but
I was just talking to Alyssa about, you know, you guys are talking about people that have these irresistible cravings for meat, but when I used to eat meat, I used to have these sort of voices in my head or my consciousness telling me or my conscience telling me to, you know, maybe you shouldn't be eating this. So maybe instead of these irresistible urges to eat meat, maybe listen to the voices in your head telling you to maybe stop eating meat, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's wonderful. I think, yeah, listening to your spirit.
Yeah.
Just to make it a little hippie, I think, yeah. You know, yeah, definitely. I think we all know, you know, when we're young, we're all friends. We see animals as our friends. We don't want to eat our friends yet. You know, society changes that and we decide, oh, hey, you know, we can eat these animals because everybody else is doing it and it's okay.
Right.
Yeah. Another thing that I'd like to briefly bring up is that some people in this survey, they commented that veganism or vegetarianism was not part of their identity. And I have to say that if, you know, if being vegan isn't a meaningful part of one's identity, then it's going to be easier to revert back to that meat consumption. And again, so how can we support people and for people who are listening to this who are struggling with that to, I guess, like, do you, to make it part of your identity is to show that you have commitment and it's to show that you have ethical and moral concern when it comes to the person who you are. So how can we support people in that?
Yeah, I think we've kind of mentioned before, it's to, you know, get out, like to find a community, whether it's in person through meetup groups. And I really think activism is really what, once you focus on the animals and you realize it isn't about you.
Yeah, for sure.
It starts to really cement. And I think, you know, like I said before, I truly believe a lot of things are kind of psychological because we do live in this very meat-based world. And to be different, you need to find people who have similar values and to talk about it and to you know, to know what's happening with animals, to keep up with all the news and to be involved in activism. And we're so lucky here in Vancouver, we have so many different groups and, you know, you don't, activism can look different to each person. So I think to some people, they see activism as people yelling. If you're not into yelling, you don't have to yell. You can go leafletting. You can put on a film screening. You can do whatever you like. There's so many different forms of activism and you can start slow. It can even be writing letters to the editor as, you know, your
I like food
gateway.
Activism because that is sharing great food with people and doing outreach in that way because everyone likes eating food. And that's just a really a sort of more benign, friendly way to do it. So I want to say that if you're a vegan who is listening to this or a vegetarian and you want to know what you can do to offer support to your friends and family who are starting on the path, well, what are some things that we can do? I know some things that I've done myself is I like to share food. I like to share recipes. I have mentored people in the past and suggested really like excellent books like, oh, you have to read this book or you have to listen to this podcast, our podcast sometimes, or you have to watch this film, Earthling, sometimes. So that's suggestions I've had. I don't know. What about you, too?
I've done some similar things kind of for sure. Yeah. Occasionally I have friends writing me, you know, messages saying I'm interested in going vegan or, you know, can you help me out? And I'll send them various websites with recipes and, vegankit.com is a great starter kit. There's some really wonderful online starter kits.
Yeah. So I just want to say as well is that if you are in that position, just remember to be kind and be patient to those around you. And remember that you were probably once in their position as well.
Awesome. So you're listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio on unceded Coast Salish territories. So now in the news, animal rights activist was attacked outside a Palm Springs restaurant. So as we've been talking about before in a few past shows, that foie gras is back on the menu across California after a statewide ban was lifted in January. Last weekend, Direct Action Everywhere organized a protest outside Le Valerieux restaurant in Palm Springs. DXC protester Nicholas Shaw McKinnon was assaulted by Omar Hadou, a manager of the high-end foie gras serving restaurant. Mr. Hadou was so enraged by the protest that he rampaged through the activists with a large wooden club, even menacing at a pregnant woman and children. Nicholas jumped forward to defend the other activists, but Nick's face and camera took the brunt of the attack. The most remarkable thing was that even though his face was being clubbed, Nick directly confronted the violence with his camera in the hand. He did not run. He did not strike back. He did not even curse. He calmly continued recording while literally being beaten in the face. and even followed the man as he walked back into the building after the attack. The video can be seen at Direct Action everywhere. And this actually made news. So it was on some local American news, and we were discussing this earlier. It was really great to watch Nicholas on the news. You could see his face was bloody, and it's quite a violent video. At first, I actually thought the pipe was a steel pipe, but even being wooden, it's still not good at all. Any kind of violence is not good. But Nicholas was being interviewed by the news reporter, and they kept asking him about his own injuries, and he kept taking it back to the animals. He kept talking about foie gras and how it was cruel and how it's about the animals, not about him, which I thought was really lovely, keeping it focused on the animals.
Thanks for that news story, Cynthia. Our feature interview today is with Paul Shapiro. He is the Vice President of Farm Animal Protection of the Humane Society of the United States, and as such, keeps up on all the latest news in the world pertaining to the animal agriculture industry, as well as societal changes in meat consumption. For our annual Meat Out Day show, we have him back here for the third year in a row to give us all the latest info on what's happening on the planet on issues surrounding the meat industry and trends towards cutting out the meat and adopting plant-based diets. Hello, Paul, and welcome back to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, Allison.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good. It's great to hear from you. Thank you for coming back on the show to impart your wisdom on recent trends for going meatless, as well as what's been happening in the meat industry. First of all, big news this week, the food service giant Aramark just announced that it's converting all its liquid eggs to cage-free, reducing the suffering of 750,000 birds per year. Can you tell us more about that, how this has come to happen, and what it will mean for the hundreds of thousands of factory-farmed hens each year who are bred for these mass-produced food products?
Well, first, Allison, I am thrilled to be back on with you. As you know, I'm a fan, and I'm honored to be back on. Second, happy Meat Out Day. It's great to be with you here on the first day of spring and the big meat out. And yes, you're absolutely right. Aramark and, in fact, two of its biggest competitors, Compass Group and Sodexo, have all committed in recent weeks to getting rid of all eggs from caged hens in their supply chain. That is a huge deal because you combine the three of them, that means that over 3.5 million fewer birds will be confined inside of battery cages and instead will be living lives free from cages. That doesn't mean, of course, that they're going to be living cruelty-free lives, but it does mean they're going to be living lives with less suffering, that their lives will be improved as a result of it, because these animals are able to walk around, they're able to spread their wings, they're able to perch, they're able to lay their eggs in nests. These are all important improvements for these animals. And while the biggest egg production states, like Iowa and Minnesota and Texas, are not banning cages for hens, the egg producers in those states who are supplying to these huge retail giants like Sodexo, Aramark, and Compass Group won't have a choice but to get rid of their cages because the demand is so great. So we're seeing changes for animals coming in the private sector because the states where the big animal agribusinesses are not willing to enact public policies. And those changes are really transforming the way that millions of animals are living.
And in other recent news, the implementation of Proposition 2 just came into effect on January 1st of this year after California voters voted in favor of it a whole 7 years ago in 2008. This was huge news for the animals back then. Can you refresh our memories about what Prop 2 entails and how you're seeing it come into effect right now?
Prop 2 is a historic ballot measure passed in 2008. It was a huge Herculean effort by the animal protection movement to put California on the map and make it, at the time, the fifth state to ban gestation crates for pigs, the third state to ban veal crates for calves, and at that time, the first state in the history of our country to ban the battery cage for egg-laying hens. There are no federal rules relating to the treatment of chickens used for food, and at that time, there were no states that had passed any rules relating to the use of chickens for food either. So this was a historic effort to pass an admittedly modest law that bans the worst forms of confinement of farm animals, but it was hugely, not just symbolic, but it affected tens of millions of animals. And subsequently, after Prop 2 was passed by voters in California in 2008, the legislature passed another bill 2 years later that applied the same standard for all eggs sold in California, though the whole eggs that are sold in California. And so now, regardless of where the eggs are produced, if they're being sold in the California marketplace, they have to be produced in compliance with Prop 2, affecting millions more animals as well. the law just took effect this January 1st, and we're still getting, we're still really seeing the law take effect in a way that is not uniform. There is a little bit of disagreement among egg producers as to what the law requires, and I think that as time goes by and we continue to see companies like these big food service providers that we were just talking about, and others like Burger King and Starbucks and Unilever and so on, who are also implementing policies to ban cages, that egg producers will look at the writing on the wall and they'll see that cage confinement of animals just doesn't have a future in their industry, that caging animals on factory farms is something that really ought to have been left in the 20th century.
And it was announced in the news last week that the vegan food company Hampton Creek has just signed a deal with major food distribution company Compass Group to replace all of its mayonnaise and cookies with Hampton Creek products. I'd like to know your thoughts on how you see this particular business move, with hopefully others to follow, paving a path for veganism and crowding out the demand for animal products in our food system that we haven't seen before in such a mainstream way.
Allison, you're hitting the nail on the head. It is so mainstream.
That was Elise, actually.
Sorry, I should have introduced myself. Hi.
What do you say?
That was Elise, another host.
Oh, I'm sorry, Elise.
No, that's okay. No worries.
I apologize profusely for that. So, Paul, well, okay. Elise, you are certainly hitting the nail on the head. Allison was way off base, but Elise, you're hitting the nail way on the head. I mean, here's the thing. This is a huge giant in food service. Compass Group operates 10,000 cafeterias in the country. They use a huge amount of food, including mayonnaise and cookies, all of which has eggs in it, to switch all of it to egg-free going through Hampton Creek reduces demand for eggs in such a dramatic way that it sends a signal in the marketplace that will result in large numbers of animals who will no longer be raised for food at all. Unlike with cage-free, which gets animals into better conditions, although, again, not necessarily cruelty-free conditions, getting rid of eggs altogether simply removes these animals from the production process altogether. And so we're seeing changes coming from these companies that really are leading the way with sustainability initiatives, like the ones that we're talking about, that are altering the course of history, making it easier for people to eat egg-free foods, and reducing the number of animals who are being raised and killed for food. It's truly mind-blowing.
So for many people, the allure of following a certain type of eating lifestyle, such as vegan, comes with the promises of losing weight. And for 2015, Beyoncé's new vegan diet that she is marketing has been named one of the top weight loss trends to follow this year. Which brings me to my question for you. What is your thought on people jumping on the bandwagon of adopting a vegan diet because they think it will help them lose weight? Do you think there's a way to retain these types of people to make it a sustainable lifestyle that isn't just about losing pounds and following celebrity-led fads?
Well, I couldn't be more psyched about Beyoncé doing this. I hope that all the single ladies get up on it, and including all the single guys and married women too. So I'll tell you, listen, Beyoncé's promotion of plant-based eating is a huge boon for animals. And there's lots of other companies that are out there that are doing similar services, but to have somebody with the prestige that she has to help mainstream the concept of vegan eating is really wonderful. So, I mean, animals don't really care why they're not being eaten. If people choose to eat vegan because they want to look better or feel better, or if they want to help the planet, or they want to help animals, I think the animals are just happy that they are avoiding being in factory farms and slaughter plants. And so I couldn't be more enthused about Beyoncé doing this. Of course, I wish that people would all do the right thing for the right reason, but I'm very happy when people do the right thing for any reason. And in this case, my hat is off to Beyoncé for what she's doing.
Well, in the U.S., just as we have here in Canada, you have a set of federal government dietary guidelines that are set and then followed by the largest institutions in the country, such as the national school lunch programs and hospitals. And just last month, the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee recommended that Americans should eat a diet that includes more plant-based foods and fewer animal-based foods. And, of course, already lobbyists from the meat and dairy industries are opposing these recommendations. Can you talk to us a bit about the impact that the USDA dietary guidelines have in the country, and then how meat lobbyists are trying to interfere with any recommendations in them to eat less meat?
It's one of the most fascinating political stories there is. Everybody is watching House of Cards now, and everybody's talking about the Underwoods. This is more fascinating than that fictional series. For decades, the meat industry has dominated the process regarding American dietary recommendations. Meat, egg, and dairy industries have. In fact, I mean, we used to have the so-called four food groups, which, were dominated by animal products. And so now we know that eating a plant-based diet is much healthier than eating a meat-centric diet. Well, the fact is that USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture, has been in charge of this process for a very long time. And that's a big conflict of interest, because the USDA's role is to promote American agriculture. It's not necessarily to promote healthy eating. In fact, many of the foods that they subsidize are the unhealthiest foods there are. So these dietary guidelines are updated every 5 years. And the last couple times, it's been a joint venture of both USDA and Health and Human Services, another federal agency in the United States. And Health and Human Services is not necessarily in bed with the meat industry in the way that USDA often is criticized for being. And so the fact that both of these agencies are now in charge of it has led to some better, more independent, more scientifically valid recommendations. They appointed, for example, as you noted, the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee of health experts to look at what the new recommendations ought to be. Now, this is extremely important. Some people may think to themselves, well, what does it matter, right? These are just recommendations. Who listens to the federal government's recommendations anyway? Well, all federal food purchases, school lunch programs, military, prisons, and so on. Huge amounts of food have to conform to these guidelines. And so to the extent that they don't recommend so much meat and so much dairy, but instead perhaps recommend eating a more plant-based diet, and far fewer animals will end up being raised and killed for food. It's as simple as that. So now the meat industry is seeing red, because the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee came up with these guidelines that didn't recommend eating any meat at all. It used to say you should eat more fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and lean meat. They've now removed the lean meat recommendation. Now, these are just recommendations to the agencies as to what they should ultimately promulgate. But the fact that the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee even took that out is what caused the meat industry to go apoplectic. So groups like the Humane Society of the United States and public health groups and environmental groups are all campaigning to keep that recommendation in, that you don't increase your consumption of lean meat. And the meat industry is fighting hard. In fact, they're just desperate. They're clinging at anything, grasping at straws, trying to get USDA to step in on their behalf. We'll see what happens. The deadline for commentary submission has been extended, but within months, we should hopefully know what the result of this would be. But the stakes just couldn't be higher.
So earlier in the show, we were talking about common obstacles for people to keep on the vegan path, as there are more ex-vegans and vegans themselves these days. What would be some succinct advice that you would like to share with people who might find themselves having challenges to stay with a vegan lifestyle?
It's a great point, and you're right. There are a lot of former vegans. And so the point that I would make is this. Many of them who I talk to find that it was too difficult to be all or nothing. Look, I've been a vegan for 21 years, and for me, I don't find it difficult at all. I find it extremely easy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember when I became vegan 21 years ago, people didn't know what the word meant. They didn't know how to pronounce it. If anything, they thought it meant I was from Vegas. It's so much easier now compared to then. But there are a lot of people who struggle with it, and I accept that they struggle with it. I think it's a very real struggle, and I'm sympathetic to their struggles. And I don't think that we should beat ourselves up if we don't make it into that all or into that 100% line. Nobody's ever going to be 100%. There's always going to be something that keeps you from that. And we shouldn't even necessarily make it a mission to try to be 100%, because that is impossible to do. I had somebody in my audience about 2 weeks ago who told me that she could be a vegetarian, but she just couldn't say no to her grandmother's turkey on Thanksgiving. I said to her, okay, well, be a vegetarian 364 days a year and don't say no to your grandmother one day a year then. I mean, isn't that a lot better? And see, this problem for us is psychologically we think that if we can't do something all the way, we may as well not do it at all. And so a lot of people give up. They said, oh, it was too hard, it was too socially difficult. But if we could just have a little bit more tolerant attitude, if we could sympathize with the real struggles that people have and be the type of vegan that we want to have met when we first became a vegan, meaning a non-judgmental one, one who embraces you for who you are and where you're at and praises you for taking the next step rather than punishing you for not yet taking the last step, I think we'd be doing a lot better off.
Very well said. Well, you wrote an article for the Common Dreams News magazine last week that reflected upon a recent victory for the animals in Ringling's Brothers retiring all their elephants after so many years of protest by animal advocates. And you said that as a society, we're beginning to take our responsibility to our fellow creatures more seriously. Interesting notion. I wonder if you could expand upon that thought some more and tell us what you see for the way we treat animals and particularly farmed animals in the future.
Well, first and foremost, the Ringling announcement was really one of those events where I suspect a lot of us in the animal protection movement will never forget where we were when we found out about it. I mean, I know I certainly won't forget. It's just, it was almost too good to be true. In fact, I didn't believe it at first. At the same time, we're seeing a cultural shift. You know, Ringling Brothers is very explicit. They're retiring elephants from their traveling circus because of cultural shifts in opinion about how animals are treated. You know, we used to believe that the Earth was the center of the universe, or at least then the center of our solar system, and scientific facts showed us why that was not true. But many people, for a while, still seemed to believe, even though Earth wasn't the center of the solar system, we still believed that humanity was the center of the moral universe, that all of the other animals on this planet with us, they, you know, they're so lowly that compared to us that they're not even like, you know, Venus or Mercury or Earth or Mars. They're not even like Jupiter or Saturn. I mean, they're like Pluto, like way out on the edges of the solar system, demoted to a dwarf planet, like with interests that are so minimal that our trivial interests, like in seeing them dance and perform unnatural acts in the circus, would outweigh their vital interest in avoiding torment and torture, which is associated with training these elephants for the circus. And now that's changing. We're starting to take a little bit more humble view of ourselves as a species and recognizing that these animals do not exist for us, but rather they are here with us. And we need to start treating them with a little bit more respect than we have treated them before. And the Ringling Brothers announcement is a result of these shifting attitudes that we have about our fellow creatures on this planet. That is going to bleed over not just into the animals and entertainment sector, but also with regard to the animals who we raise and kill for food. Right now, we're treating farm animals worse than we treat the most heinous criminals in our society, murderers and rapists. We wouldn't put them in jail cells where they can't even turn around or lift their arms for their entire lives. Yet what crime have chickens and pigs committed to deserve that type of lifelong misery? And more people are asking these type of questions, and when we ask those questions, that is what is the catalyst for change in our society for animals.
Finally, to end the interview, I'd like to ask you if there are any new initiatives that you are working on with the HSUS in the interests of farmed animals and encouraging people to shift away from a meat-based lifestyle.
Great question. I couldn't be more enthusiastic about this. HSUS for years has been encouraging people to eat less meat, eat a more plant-based diet. At the same time, we have recently been doing a lot more in the institutional food sector. Dining halls, school districts, hospital chains, even prisons, anywhere where there's institutional food service, we are working with them to implement meat reduction programs, whether they be Meatless Mondays or other types of programs that institutionally slash the amount of meat that they're using in these facilities. We've had tremendous success, whether it's in cities like Los Angeles, Detroit, San Diego, and others, where we're implementing meat reduction programs across hundreds and hundreds of schools at a time, or whether it's in some schools, like, for example, in Dallas, where they're now replacing all the ground beef, not just on Mondays, but 5 days a week that they're serving food, all the ground beef is being replaced with Beyond Meat crumbles. Wow. That is truly astounding. I mean, that is transformative. We're altering the course of history here by, in the same way Hampton Creek is institutionally reducing egg use, we are institutionally reducing meat use at many of these gigantic facilities. You may have heard of what happened in University of North Texas, where they had the first all-vegan dining hall at a campus. They did such a great job there that HSUS hired the director of dining from that dining facility, Ken Botts, a wonderful guy, a hero for animals, And he now is traveling around the country for HSUS, working with other schools to implement similar types of programs and policies at their dining halls. So we're transforming the way that institutional food service is going, and we're going to continue doing that. We have new positions open. We have positions open that we're looking to hire new staff for across the United States to implement these type of meat reduction policies in dining facilities. So if you're interested, check out humanesociety.org and go to the employment page and check out what positions we open. We're going to continue expanding and continue helping institutions buy and serve less meat.
Well, thank you, Paul, for coming on our annual Meatout show today to share some more of your insights in current news in animal agriculture and the trends towards eating less meat. I also wanted to congratulate you on running your fastest half marathon ever last year on your 21st veganiversary. Congratulations on that.
That's
amazing.
To find out
more about the work that Paul does for farmed animal protection, please visit the website humanesociety.org. Thanks, Paul, and have a great day.
Allison, Elise, it's a pleasure and honor to be on with you, and happy Meat Out.
Thank you. You too.
You're listening to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO here in Vancouver. My name's Alyssa. That was a great Meat Out show. Please join us for our next show Friday, March 27th. We want to keep in touch with you, our lovely listeners. Please drop us a note. Drop us a note on our Facebook page or at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We want to hear what you liked that you heard today and maybe what you didn't like. We want to hear what you want to hear more of. And we're going to close the show with a song by Freddie Clark, a vegan musician. This song's called Nothing with a Face. Stay tuned to Co-op Radio for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thanks so much for listening to Animal Voices. And remember to be kind to all animals, human and non.
Bless us, O Lord, and these thy gifts, which we're about to receive from thy bounty through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Says I eat nothing with a face. I never kill anything before I say grace. I eat nothing's child, nothing's brother, nothing's boyfriend or significant other, nothing's newborn, nothing's kid, nothing's mother who got what her mother did. Nothing, nothing with a face, nothing. I hate to waste nothing. Nothing with a face. I don't kill anything before I say grace. I'm Swan Dang from Vietnam. Got a vegan house called Lack of Lamb. I eat nothing's kidney, nothing's liver, nothing's finger, slowly simmer. Nothing's body baked in honey. Nothing's ass that's grown for money. On your plate, you're about to eat the safe way slaughter from womb to tomb to this plain white wrapper in your dining room.
Foul mouth,
I eat nothing's legs.
Foul mouth,
I eat nothing's thighs.
Foul mouth,
I eat nothing's wings.
Foul mouth, I eat nothing's eyes.
This lamb is your lamb.
This lamb is my lamb. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this lamb was made for you and me.